So I'm on the phone today with Lindsay Baer, Program Director for the Native Cultures Fund at Humboldt Area Foundation. Hi, Lindsay. How you doing?
I am really well. How are you, Jessica?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us. I would love to know a little bit about you. You're relatively new to the Humboldt County area, so I'd like to learn a little bit about your background, and then we can sort of segue into what the Native Cultures Fund does for our region and our community members.
You're right. We are. My family is brand new. We've just moved up to Humboldt County last winter. So we've been here about 8 months. I moved up with my husband, John, and our baby daughter, Maya, from the Bay Area.
We're very lucky to have your family here with us.
We feel so fortunate to be up here. It's an honor to get to live on Wiat land. Every day I drive to work and just think it's the most beautiful day I've ever seen. So we're honored to be guests on Wiat land, just like we were honored to be guests on Ohlone land. We were down in the Bay Area for many years. I worked for Heyday before this, which is a little publishing company that specializes in books and magazines on California, and I worked on News from Native California magazine and the California Indian book list down there.
You describe it as a small publishing company, and maybe it is relatively speaking, but News from Native California and some of the books that I've read that, you know, reside in my bookshelf are pretty widely read. So it's not a small thing, that publishing company.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Mostly because I think we have some of the most fantastic authors in the world. I just went to a book launch for Lynn Risling's new children's book, Coyote at the Big Time, which
right.
The Native Cultures Fund supported and Heyday just published. And, you know, she's spectacular. That book is gorgeous. So I felt really fortunate to get to work, especially with the California Indian authors down there.
Yeah, that is a beautiful book. She is quite talented, one of my favorite artists in the region. And so that's really special that you were able to help bring that to all the readers. What other sorts of books could you describe published through Heyday?
Some of my favorites when I was there that I got to work on were Dugan Aguilar's book of photographs, She Sang Me a Good Luck Song. Dugan is Mountain Maidu in Paiute. He's a photographer. And we did a retrospective of his work, and he had been photographing California Indian communities around the state for 40 years. And because he was so skilled, but also so respectful and so warm and gentle, you can just see in his photos how people would open up to him, how he was welcome. Mm-hmm. And that was a really special project for me to work on. I got to work on Bad Indians by Deborah Miranda, which
she's
an Esalen woman who wrote that wonderful tribal memoir that goes all the way back to pre-missions and her family. And she writes it in all different voices and medium. And it is one of the most beautifully angry, painful, touching pieces of work that I've ever read, actually. So that was a real joy. And she's also just a very generous person.
Oh, yeah, that is one powerful publication there.
And
so very nuanced and just rich. Wow, those are amazing examples. Tell me about the need for a publishing company that focuses on Native interests.
You know, there's not a lot of Native representation in publishing. Like a lot of media, there are not a lot of Native people employed in publishing. There's not a ton of Native authors being published. Even within the field of Native books, it's still dominated by non-Native authors talking about Native cultures that they're studying or visiting or learning about. And that's one voice, but a much deeper, more nuanced set of voices and understandings of Indigenous culture are the people who come from these cultures, the people who are part of the oral traditions of California that were not broken by colonization and genocide. You know, there's still threads of that oral culture from pre-contact and knowledge that was still being practiced, is still, you know, in teachings that are still passed down to children of how to be a good person, that still reside in these communities in California. And so to have a place that published those, that helped those voices connect with other, you know, Native communities, help the non-Native community, get an authentic understanding of where Native people were at, who they were, you know, what they're doing now, was really special. And to me, I think it's important for the Native community as this sort of cultural renaissance that we're in progresses, but it's also really vital to California and to the world at large to pay attention and tap into a lot of the indigenous knowledge systems that might really save us in the era of climate change and social unrest that we find ourselves in. There's a lot of the practices and teachings of Native people, especially in California, around things like land management that could stop our mega wildfire epidemic, right? Like that's one example of a place where had we listened to our California Indian hosts, had we been better guests on this land, had we managed the forest with fire the way that they had for thousands of years and they tried to teach us, we wouldn't have these immense fuel loads that we have now. We wouldn't have these fires that are so destructive. And so, you know, that's one little example of why it's important not just for Native people to be able to read and understand Native knowledge, but for everyone else to have at least the opportunity, whether they take it or not, to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's such a richness and a sense of place that you just cannot replicate.
As
a visitor, right? You just can't know a place as a visitor in the same way indigeneity can, the way the folks that are from that place can.
And I think it's a really beautiful thing, the kind of guest-host relationship that's possible if we respect that sense of place and how special that is. You know, I had lived in the Bay Area for 17 years. I've only lived here for 8 months. But even 17 years gave me nowhere near the understanding of, say, my office mate, Vincent Medina, who was Chichenyo Ohlone, whose family had been there for time immemorial. You know, he could walk through that city and see the shell mounds. He knew the language that had come from there. Up here, I work with people who, you know, still actively speak the languages that came from this place. You know, they have the families that have the absolute deepest knowledge of how the river works and how the fish run. And it's really special to get to be a guest and to have a respect for the people who really have the deepest and truest sense of this place.
Absolutely. And it's an understanding, you know, for those of us who are visitors and guests on this land. I think it's gaining strength, this understanding that there is tremendous value in honoring the people that are from this place. I know traditional ecological knowledge, for example, is sort of gaining momentum in terms of a more broad legitimacy in terms of Western science. A lot of biologists and the like are really learning to honor those ways of knowing, those worldviews that actually expressed something that Western science is really hard-pressed to understand.
Yeah, it's good to see science sort of catching up.
It's about time, right?
And I think you're right. I think it is. I think it is a growing realization. And I especially here, you have some of the largest tribes in California up here. There's such a rich, dense amount of culture and tradition that are here. It, even among California, California is one of the most culturally diverse places in the world traditionally. And up here is special in the amount of that culture that's still here.
Yeah, it's a profound cultural strength, you know, especially in light of enduring colonial incursion, well, ongoing colonial incursion, I should say, because I feel like it just hasn't quite come to an end.
No, I mean, when you think about, you know, many of the sacred spaces here, places that people go to pray, that they need to go to do ceremony. There's often only one place that you can do that. The culture's here endemic in that way. You know, there's one center of the world for your belief system. A lot of those are on public lands. You need to get permits to go to your own church. You know, a lot of the traditional supplies that people need to make regalia or basket weaving, any of these really beautiful art forms that are native here, are on either private land that people can't access, or on public land. For years, they were being sprayed. So you think that, you know, people would get amazing basket weavers would get tickets for gathering their own supplies, or would have to sneak to do it, or had to fear for their health to weave those beautiful baskets that you see in the Clark. It really isn't entirely safe.
Right. And what a demonstration of a lack of respect, sadly. And I love the way that you articulated that and framed it in a way that I think a lot of we visitors understand in terms of a church. It is this spiritual, soulful connection, and to prohibit that or to punish folks for engaging in what we say is a right.
Yeah. And it wasn't until 1978 that it became legal to practice Native American religions, that they were recognized as religions. That's 40 years ago.
That's shocking.
That is not long.
No, that's in my lifetime. That is shocking.
Right. Mine too.
And so now what you're doing, you're here in Humboldt County and you're the program director for the Native Cultures Fund. And tell me about what that allows you to do.
Well, so the Native Cultures Fund is here at the Humboldt Area Foundation. It was started in sort of 1999, 2000, by really powerful Native cultural leaders here as a way to bring some of the funding, arts funding, philanthropy that's out in the world into Native communities where people were practicing their culture, their art, ceremony, all the life ways that were attacked when colonialization came. And we like to define culture here that broadly. The culture is all of the teachings and the life ways, all of the arts, the land stewardship, the way families were structured, the gender equality, the healthy food systems, you know, as well as the beautiful arts and ceremony. And the Native Cultures Fund makes grants that support these endeavors. They're all made by Native people. All our grant making is done by committees of culture bearers. We make grants all across most of California.
Mm.
And so culture bearers from around the state come together twice a year to support projects. And, you know, sometimes the support is as little as food so that a basket weaving class can happen, or porta potties for a ceremony. The things that may not always be entirely glamorous, but are necessary.
Right, all part of helping it happen.
Yeah, there's also a scholarship fund, the Jack Montoya Scholarship Fund, that is for Native students in California who are active in their cultures and who are really strengthening their cultures to also support them in going to college. And that, too, is all community grant making. So it's all made by the people who it also goes to. And sometimes I think I'm just the secretary and the janitor. You know, I have the very privileged position of getting to coordinate this, to do what I can to support this. Right now, we're in kind of a reimagining phase of the program. So I get to travel the state and do listening all across the state for about a year with this wonderful Chumash curator and consultant, Dina Dart. We're going to make a big community art project as we go through the state together. We're going to eat. We're going to laugh. We're going to sit down with communities and talk about where they are with culture now, where they are with civic engagement now, how we're partnering with the California Endowment to do this, what their barriers are, how funders could be helpful, you know, where they want to see their communities. And what we know, what's been studied, is that a key to communal health, to community resilience, is culture, access to your own culture. And so we get to go on the road and talk to people about how we can support that. And we're starting it actually here on September 22nd.
Oh, is that right?
Here at the Humboldt Area Foundation. We're planning our first listening dinner, and we'll go around the state and we'll loop back here. And so that's what I get to do, and then bring it all together. And we're putting together an advisory board of Native people to really guide this. So the point really is California tribal people having access to funding and resources, and then deciding how they would like that distributed.
That is tremendous work, really. And it's just a beautiful thing. And I have to say, I'm really grateful that there are efforts like this taking place, that there are people like you out there that are facilitating, you know, assisting with cultural strengthening and the efforts to share that. You know, we all, as you had said previously, we all benefit from it. There's knowledge to be shared and understandings to take inside oneself to get a sense of place and to really build community, to build resilience, all of us together.
Yeah, you know, I think the most important part of what you're sort of touching on there is that all of this resilience, all of this power, all of this knowledge, it's already within Native communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the California Indian people, they have this already. It's just about we who are guests here making the space, doing what we can to be good neighbors, staying out of the way sometimes, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's really beautiful is the amount of power and care and love still in these communities and the just the kind of brilliance that's already there. I do want to make a plug for the Wiat Honor Tax. It's something that Humboldt Area Foundation pays. I know Seventh Generation Fund also pays it. I know that several, many businesses in the area pay it. I'm sure I don't know the extent of it,
mm-hmm.
but it's a wonderful practical way to be a good neighbor, to support the local tribe whose land we live on. They are doing gorgeous cultural work. It's just, it's stunning to be up on Table Bluff, and it's really easy. You pay a voluntary honor tax in gratitude for living on their beautiful homeland.
Which makes a heck of a lot of sense to me, to be honest. It's basic acknowledgement of where we are.
It is, and I think a really nice way for people who maybe don't know how to engage with their Native communities, aren't really deeply tapped in or are just learning about this or want to be better neighbors. It's a really simple way to just contribute.
Yep. I really love the idea of building this expectation that we're going to honor the people whose land we're on.
Yeah, it's not hard, and maybe it's a good step toward not repeating history.
Well, hear, hear. I would like that for all of us to learn how to be more respectful of one another. And I think the work that you do, the work that you've done through assisting with publications and what you do now to assist with cultures that are trying to continue their ways and get stronger and share it with their next generation and then to help the rest of us learn from that, I think it's really beautiful work and I think we're all better for it. So I thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all of the wonderful radio that I get to enjoy. It's such a delight to be part of this community.
Well, great, Lindsay. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're very busy, and I'm hoping that we can invite you back and you can bring folks that you think we need to hear from. I want to invite you to share the microphone with us.
Thank you. I would love to. There are so many people here worth hearing.
Well, I wish you a sweet day, and thanks again, Lindsay.
You too, Jessica. Thank you.
That was Lindsay Bear, Program Director for the Native Cultures Fund at Humboldt Area Foundation. Thank you, Lindsay, and we look forward to hearing from her soon again.